athletic competition. It can easily be broken down into two parts: the minutes or hours it takes to complete the event. Then weeks, months, and years of joy or heartbreak. Finally, the decades to analyze and debate it. From the press box to press row, Donald Ware will break it all down for you with an in-depth look at historically black college athletics, as well as the biggest news stories and newsmakers of the day. It's time to talk the talk with those who walk the walk. From the press box to press row, here's your host, Donald Ware.
I think very deeply.
In about 4 seconds, a teacher will begin to speak.
I think very deeply.
As always, thank you for joining me on another edition of the program. So, I know it was last Sunday, but the NBA All-Star Game, in of itself. Now, the weekend is fine. Sat there and watched the celebrity game, which was okay. The celebrity game isn't as good as it used to be. It's fine, right? The slam dunk contest was fine. Like, Mac McClung won it again, right? The three-point contest, Tyler Hero won it out of the Heat, or for the Heat, and even the skills challenge with the Cavaliers winning it. All fine. Like, no problems there. I have no problems with that. The game, when they tried the new format with the Shaq's OGs and Candace's Rising Stars and Kenny's Young Stars and Chuck's Global Stars, and of course Shaq's OGs ended up crushing Chuck's Global All-Stars or Global Stars 41-25 in the final game. It was something different that the NBA had done. I didn't like it. I mean, I mean, flat out. Like, I didn't like it at all. I realized that the NBA wanted to try something different because, again, television speaks to everything. And the viewers are the ones that had most of the concerns, and you want to try to satisfy the viewers because when you're talking about people coming to the game, I mean, you know, the game being in San Francisco doesn't hurt. Game was in Indianapolis last year. You know, the numbers were there. Like, last year was like, what, $350 million that was an economic impact towards Indianapolis and the greater Indiana, the state of Indiana, the greater Indianapolis area. And so that's not the issue. And, of course, the NBA is always going to come in and do good work and all of that. But the game in of itself, I didn't like it at all. And we're going to talk more about that on today's program. Look, let me set the table for you because we got a lot to get to. We're going to talk a lot of NBA today here on Box to Row. Joining us today here on the program, look, the Florida A&M Rattlers under first-year head coach Patrick Crary II are 12-12 on the season. More importantly, 9-4 in SWAC play, which has the Rattlers in second place with, in essence, the second half of the season still left to play. Plenty of games still left to play in the SWAC. And so Patrick Crary, again, just in his first season as the head men's basketball coach at Florida A&M, he's going to join us today on the program. As I mentioned, we've got some NBA talk to talk about today here on the program. We're on the other side of the second half, or we're in the second half of the season, but we're on the other side of the midway point of the season. So we're going to talk a lot of NBA on the program. We can talk who has the opportunity to challenge, who's going to come out of the West, who's going to come out of the East, and perhaps take it all this year in the NBA. I mean, I think it's really up for grabs. I don't think there's any dominant team per se. I mean, I really like the way, OKC is playing out of the West. I mean, I realize the Cavaliers are on top, but the Celtics are the defending champs. And the Celtics are so deep. Anytime, like, remember, as good as Kristaps Porzingis was last year over the course of a lot of games last year, I mean, he, you know, there was a lot of playoff games that he missed last year, and it didn't even matter because the Celtics were that good. So we'll talk about all of that today here on the program with, again, Patrick Crary, the head men's basketball coach at Florida A&M, joining us on the program. Look, you can participate here on Box to Row. Hit me up via X at Box to Row, BOXTOROW. Follow us while you're there. Also on Instagram, BOXTOROW. Follow us while you're there. Also, you can hit me up on my personal X account at DWare1, at DWare1. So let me get back to this All-Star format. And it was a format in which it started out this way. You had Shaq's OGs, which, I mean, that's the team consisting of LeBron James, who didn't play in the All-Star game. And probably a good thing that he didn't play like that. It was just a disaster. Like, I don't know what else to really say about it. I mean, I don't really blame the NBA tried something. I mean, I got to give the NBA a little bit of credit for trying something different, listening to what people were saying or are saying about the All-Star game, and it just didn't work. I mean, I think for me, and I'm going to talk more about the format and all of that, and let me just talk about the format, and then I'll give you my thoughts. So you had Shaq's OGs taking on Kansas's Rising Stars. So you had the Rising Stars that played in the Rising Stars game on Friday, the best of the best from that. You know, I guess it was somewhat competitive, but, you know, Shaq's OGs with Kevin Durant and, you know, Steph Curry and Jason Tatum and all of those guys, I mean, took care of business. Then the next game was Kenny's Young Stars. So you had the Young Star, you know, the Young Stars of the game, you know, SGA and all of those guys taking on Chuck's Global Stars with, you know, the Joker and all of the, you know, all of the guys that are, except for a couple of guys like Donovan Mitchell was on this team. You know, he's not an international player. A couple of other players, or at least one other player that is just not coming to my mind. I don't have the roster in front of me, also on this team. And then, so the winners between those two games, which Shaq's OGs won, and then Chuck's Global Stars won, and then those two games or teams met in the final game, which Shaq's OGs blew Chuck's Global Stars out 41-25. And I mean, there were so many things wrong. So many things wrong with this on so many levels, right? Like, I get trying to try something new. You gave it a shot. I don't think it worked. I hope, because for me, I got to tell you, for me, like, I didn't have a major problem with the format as it was in terms of, you know, the East versus the West. Like, they tried some other stuff in years past just to, you know, have different teams have the, you know, like, you know, you had one year on Antetokounmpo and LeBron drafted players. I mean, they've tried different things, and it's fine. Like, you know, I think the complaint was a lot of guys weren't playing defense. It wasn't guys weren't playing hard. Well, I mean, so many levels to this. Number one, like, this isn't baseball. Like, in the baseball All-Star game, even though guys can get hurt, like, it's not the same level of getting hurt, right? And, of course, it's not as brutal as football. And look what football did. Football took away its Pro Bowl, in essence. The old Pro Bowl game where guys used to play like real football, okay, where you could really, really get hurt, even though you may not have been playing to the level you would have played in a regular season game or a playoff game. But guys can get hurt. Now, if you're an Oklahoma City Thunder fan, right, do you want SGA getting hurt and you're trying to make a run to the championship? Like, no. So I don't blame guys for not playing particularly hard, for not wanting to get hurt. And look, for all of those that talked about the level of play from the standpoint of there's too many threes and too many dunks that happen in the All-Star game, right? Guys just jacking up threes, guys just dunking all over the place, no defense is being played. Well, to me, as an NBA fan, like, I'm not against that because, you know, you're going to see guys shooting from the logo, right? You're going to see guys shooting from deep. Now, we're starting to see guys shoot from much further out, talking 27 feet, 29 feet, and those distances. But in these All-Star games, you're seeing guys shoot from the half court or just over the half court line. And look, the thing about that in the format from previous years, right, to me, there was no difference. Like, you did this format this way, and at least in the final game, there was no more competition in the final game than there was in last year's All-Star game. Guys shooting a bunch of threes from way out. I mean, Steph Curry launched, I mean, probably the highlight of that game was Steph Curry launching the three-pointer from half court and making it. Like, it was the same thing we saw in previous year's All-Star games. Guys launching long three-pointers. Not a lot of defense being played. Dunks not being challenged. But that was okay for me. So, to me, but really, I'm going to tell you what, even more than the on-the-play court or on the play that was on the court, for me, it was almost sort of a discombobulation. It looked unorganized at times, right? In other words, you'd go to get to 15, they'd take a break, and especially in the final game, like I think the score was like 15 to 8 or whatever it was, they took a break. The break was like for 25 minutes. They took like a 25-minute break. Like, it was just all over the place. And I think that sort of contributed to me really not liking it and really thinking it was more of a disaster than anything else. The on-the-court play was what it was. It was no different, again, especially in the final game, than what we've seen in years past. But further, all of these long breaks, you get to 15, you're taking a 10-minute break in the champion in the final game. They got to 15. They took a 25-minute break. It was way too long, and it was like it was jaded in a lot of ways. So, you know, those are my thoughts on the All-Star game. Other than that, the weekend, you know, with the slam dunk contest and all that was fine to me. Still to come here on Box to Row, we're talking with Florida A&M head men's basketball coach Patrick Crary. More NBA talk still to come.
If you're going on a trip and you need a car reservation, call the car reservation hotline now for access to every major rental car deal across the United States. We can save you a ton of money. Don't get lost searching, and don't get lost in an endless phone tree nightmare. When you call us, there's never a hold time. You'll get connected to a real human. We have access to crazy rental car deals, and we make it easy. Just one phone call to access everything. How much simpler can it get? Find out right now for free what kind of car rental deals we can get you. You'll be amazed. Pick up the phone and call the car rental hotline right now.
Call 800-917-1119. 800-917-1119.
We'll even give you one free rental car day with your reservation. Write this number down right now and call.
Call 800-917-1119. That's 800-917-1119.
On last week's From the Press Box to Press Row with Donald Ware.
Robert Jones, he's the head men's basketball coach at Norfolk State.
No, for the most part, it doesn't feel like 12 years because the landscape has changed, well, just college basketball. So it's like, you know, now it's like we're kind of in the JUCO era, you know, so it feels like almost a new job because you're out there and, you know, you got guys for 1, 2 years, maybe 3 years, and they're gone. You know, I think the years of having four-year players are pretty much over. All this is new. It kind of keeps the job fresh. There's a lot of good things that I think I've done in my career so far at Norfolk State, but those things are in the past. So you got to keep trying to create new things and create a different path, a different future.
From the Press Box to Press Row is one of the hottest sports talk shows in the country. Join Donald each week as he takes you on a journey through the world of HBCU sports and pro sports and interviews with top sports and entertainment figures. That's From the Press Box to Press Row each week on your favorite station.
You're listening to From the Press Box to Press Row.
From the Press Box to Press Row.
Box to Box row. To
Box to Row.
Box to Row.
Get you like this. Early in the morning, hopping to the BNZ. I got 44 ways of getting paid. Sitting in my lap as I roll up the Compton blocks. The scoop up ran.
Still to come here on Box to Row. Florida A&M head men's basketball coach Patrick Crary II going to join us on the program. In the last segment, talking some NBA and going to talk some more NBA a little bit later on. In the program, the HBCU National Players of the Week, Alabama State guard TJ Madlock in two victories for the Hornets last week, averaged 19 points, 8 rebounds, 3.5 assists, and shot 52% from the field. Then Virginia Union forward Tania Green in two victories last week for the Panthers, averaged 16 points, 10.5 rebounds, 2 steals, and shot 55% from the field. So TJ Madlock of Alabama State and Tania Green of Virginia Union, the HBCU National Players of the Week. And for more information on both Tania and TJ, visit our website at BoxToRow.com. I had a chance, as the MEAC sort of begins its second half of the season, and as you know, because of the number of teams, the MEAC only has 8 teams, so because of the number of teams, sometimes the MEAC will have like 12 days off in between games, and you know, it used to be a Monday, Saturday format. Now sometimes it may be a Saturday to Saturday format, Monday to Monday. Sometimes you may Monday and then you don't play till the following Saturday. But the second half begins this Saturday, this weekend, with all of the teams. And then you go back to the Saturday, Monday format to end the season. And while Norfolk State right now is 18-8 on the season, of course, we talk with Robert Jones, the head men's basketball coach at Norfolk State, right here on the program last week. If you missed that conversation, you can visit BoxToRow.com in our podcast section and listen to that show and that conversation. Norfolk State is 8-1 on the season. The next teams are South Carolina State and Howard, the two-time defending MEAC tournament champion Howard Bison, are both 6-3. Also last week we had Delaware State head men's basketball coach Stan Waterman on the program last week, and the Hornets fell at Norfolk State on Monday. Again, Norfolk State is extremely tough. But that said, I mean, you've got some teams that are right there. I had a chance to on Monday to be at the North Carolina Central and Morgan State game. Morgan was down early, but Morgan's got a really, really good squad, some bona fide scorers. And the only loss for Norfolk State so far this season was at the hands of the Bears. And the two teams are going to meet on Monday, as a matter of fact. So that should be an interesting ball game. It's going to be at Norfolk State. And that's almost a must win. If you're Morgan State, that's almost a must win. As a matter of fact, because Norfolk State is 2 games ahead of South Carolina State and Howard, all of these games are important. You know, Norfolk State wins maybe 2 more games, then you're talking about being at 10-1 with 4 remaining. It's going to be hard to catch the Spartans. So these teams, particularly South Carolina State, Howard, you know, have to win games. Delaware State, Morgan State, I don't think can afford to lose any more games if those two teams want to finish at the top or near the top of the MEAC. Right now, it's Norfolk State and then everybody else. But again, second half of the season, Norfolk State has to play all of these teams, including the teams that are right there with the Spartans in terms of the upper echelon teams. And speaking of some of those teams in a good matchup, I mean, South Carolina State is going to host Delaware State on Saturday. So that's what I'm talking about with the MEAC. Like, you know, you got teams fighting for to be at or near the top. I mean, it's going to be hard to catch Norfolk State right now, particularly the way that the Spartans are playing. But you want to be near the top if you can't, in fact, catch Norfolk State. Looking at the SWAC, well, right now Southern is running away with things. Southern had the setback to Alabama State, but has won two straight games since that setback. So, you know, sort of a similar situation when you're looking at the SWAC, right? Southern is 12-1. The next teams, Florida A&M, and again, don't forget, in the next segment, we're going to be joined by Patrick Crary, Patrick Crary II, the head men's basketball coach at Florida A&M. But Florida A&M is 9-4. Jackson State is 9-4. Then you've got some teams, Alabama State, Texas Southern, Bethune-Cookman, Alcorn State, are all 8-5 and sort of vying to get towards the top. And then you got Grambling at 6-7, down season for the defending tournament champion Grambling State Tigers. But right now, Southern is kind of running away with things. But again, I mean, it's a tough schedule because Southern has to go to Grambling State. Now, while Grambling State may be down, Grambling State isn't out. That's a well-coached Dante Jackson is one of the better coaches you're going to find. So you've got the Jackson State, or excuse me, Southern has that matchup, then has to go to Bethune, also has to go to Florida A&M. So you're talking about three straight games on the road against teams that are in second place right now for Southern. So that's a tough gauntlet for Southern. And then have to end things with Alabama State at home, and then the final game, Alabama A&M, who Alabama A&M, the Bulldogs aren't playing well right now, but Alabama State, as I mentioned, still in that mix at 8-5. So, you know, you've got some games remaining in this sort of second half of both the MEAC and the SWAC. And so I'm interested to see what's going to happen if Ken Southern, in fact, hang on. Can Norfolk State, in fact, hang on and win the and again, I've got to say, I don't think that either one of those teams is going to fall off. I think both of those teams in good position, but you still got to play the games. I mean, that at the end of the day. So we'll ultimately see what happens. You know, when I take a look at Tennessee State, like Tennessee State is still kind of vying. Like Tennessee State hanging around a little bit, right? Like you've got SEMO. When I look at the Ohio Valley Conference, you've got SEMO at 12-4. You've got SIUE at 11-5, Little Rock's 11-5, and then Tennessee State is 10-7, 14-14 overall. So, you know, Tennessee State is looking maybe to move up a little bit more. I mean, SEMO has only got a one game, I guess, really a one game lead in the loss column, really a overall one game lead over SIUE or Southern Illinois University, as it were, right? But, you know, that's going to be interesting. Can Tennessee State start to make its climb, start to make its way towards the top of the Ohio Valley Conference and get that, you know, we're talking about seedings now for the tournament. And right now, A&T, when you look at the CAA, just struggling right now, only one win in conference play for the Aggies. So as we continue our conversation and kind of looking at the SWAC and the MEAC, don't forget Patrick Crary II, the head men's basketball coach of Florida A&M, going to join us here on Box to Row. Let's switch gears. I want to talk about this Four Nations face-off, right? Like we talked about the NBA All-Star game, and I just did not like the format at all, and the Four Nations face-off was something different from the All-Star game, right? And I thought it was very much a success. And on Thursday, Canada defeated the U.S. 3-2 in overtime to take the crown at the beginning of the tournament, or the four teams in the tournament, Canada, Finland, Sweden, and the United States. And the United States got off to the great start with the first win going back several days ago now, lost on Monday, but in a game that didn't really mean anything because we already knew that the United States was going to be in the finals, and then lost to Canada 3-2 in overtime. I'm going to tell you what, and Nate McKinnon was spectacular throughout the course of this. Now, of course, David McConnor scored the game-winning goal in overtime. Like, I'm not the hugest of hockey fans. Like, I really am not. However, growing up in Washington in the D.C. area, I was a big Capitals fan. Like, we went to a lot of Capitals games, or quite a few. Watched the Capitals on local TV. At that time, we didn't have cable. So, like, the way that TV worked then, I know the Bullets would have like games on cable, HTS, I guess home team sports at that time, but some of the games, especially the road games, would be broadcast on a local TV station. Same thing, I think, with the Capitals. So when we didn't have cable, would watch the Capitals on TV and really enjoyed it. The days of Rod Langway and Mike Gartner, the Capitals weren't necessarily like greatly, they were competitive. They didn't make the playoffs, if I remember correctly, a lot, but were competitive. And now being here in North Carolina, in the capital city of Raleigh, it's been a while actually since I've been to a Hurricanes game, but kind of being around, keeping up with the Hurricanes, having covered the 2011 All-Star weekend right here in Raleigh. You know, I'm not into it as much, but still enjoy it. So really had a chance to enjoy the championship game, all that it meant. I mean, these guys played tremendously hard. You're talking about a 3-2 game. If I can recall, there's only one penalty in this game. The U.S. had plenty of opportunities. And, I mean, you got to give a lot of credit to the goalie Bennington for Canada. I mean, he was absolutely spectacular, especially in the third period, but more so even in the overtime period. It was, I thought, a tremendous success, this Four Nations. Of course, you've got the team's going to play in the Olympics on next year, so we'll see what happens in terms of the NHL moving forward, if they'll bring this back. Patrick Crary, the head men's basketball coach at Florida A&M, is up next.
You're listening to From the Press Box to Press Row.
Here with Stephen Curry, your progress from Davidson to now with Golden State.
Where I've come from in high school into a small D1 college at Davidson. It's a great story, and I'm just having fun, living my dream and riding the ride.
Main event! Jey Uso joining us here. Could there be a possible return to the bloodline?
For me?
Yes. At some point.
I'm gone, D. Hey. I threw the deuces up before. I'll do it again, man.
Come on, main event. That's family, man. I mean, I'm not talking about now. I get it. But down the line, like, come on.
Hey, D, you see how they be treating me, man? Come on, man. It be your own family sometimes be doing you wrong, Lou. I got to go, man. Hey, I'm doing all right by myself.
She's Simone Biles.
Actually really fun, like, to be honest. Had a lot of fun. People were like, oh, of course, like, we're in the best shape of our life. We're feeling confident about our body, and we hope that other young girls and women, like, feel that being strong is still beautiful.
The one and only Michael Strahan. And cannot have you on without talking about Texas Southern. Cannot. So how did you ultimately end up at Texas Southern?
Yeah, from Houston, grew up in Germany. When I was a senior in high school, my dad said, I'm going to send you to stay with your uncle in Houston and get a football scholarship. So I went to Houston. I played at Westbury High School for 1 year. Texas Southern was probably the only school that saw me play, being right there in Houston and being a local boy. And Coach Walter Highsmith, I went over to see him, and he offered me a scholarship. It was perfect for me, man, to go to the HBCU, to go to Texas Southern. The size of the school, the education they gave me, not just in the classroom, but about life. I would have been swallowed up at another school. I wouldn't have felt as if I really could have made a difference or had a real purpose of being there. But at Texas Southern, I always felt like I could make a difference and I had a purpose.
Hey, what's up, everybody? This is Skylar Diggins of the WNBA. Thank you for having me. I'm excited. You know, just been able to work a lot on my body and my shape, and a lot of things that I feel like I needed to work on in the off season. Was able to get that done, and it's showing.
Snoop Dogg is on the mic. Pay attention.
I appreciate the love that I get, and I appreciate the sport of hip hop, and it's given me back that same love in return, you know, for the amount of years that I've been doing it. I've always went into it with the same, you know, spirit of I make music for the people. I make it go for them, and I always make them a part of it. And I never separated myself and tried to be a star. I've always wanted to be one of the people that you can look to as somebody that was, you know, like your uncle because of the way that I treat people. And I feel like my career is representative of that. That's why the longevity is there. That's why the love is there. And that's why I maintain the status of, you know, being relevant for so many years.
I'm talking about none other than Serena Williams.
That was definitely one of the better matches I've ever played. I've had it just like that. You know, I was really focused. Just really, you know, excited.
Demetrius Flannery, a.k.a. Lil Meech.
50 Cent in Atlanta told me that he was going to move me from my hometown, Miami, to L.A., put me in acting classes. And I had to go 5 days a week, 2 times a day. Only had about a year and a half. But once I started, I didn't want to stop, you know. So once in a lifetime opportunity, I didn't want to watch somebody else, you know, get the role of playing my father and me having to watch him on TV. Opportunity passed me by, so I just buckled down and just focused, man. Put everything to the side and made sure that my number one thing that I wanted to do was focus on being the best possible actor I can be for the show. And that's how it happened, man.
That is the voice of Kevin Durant.
Oh, yeah, well, I'm just, you know, trying to get better every single day. We've been through a lot as a team, and I enjoy playing with a great group of guys. So, you know, I'm just trying to enjoy every moment of it.
That is the voice of Common. You went to Florida A&M.
Oh, FAMU days were some of the best days of my life. I mean, I had so much fun there. It was like invigorating. It was an introduction to a new aspect of culture in the world. I mean, the Southern girls was just incredible. you know, the food was great. The black college experience, you can't beat that.
Kyrie Irving.
Playing at Duke for Coach K. What was that like and how that prepared you for the league now?
Playing 11 games, you know, a lot of people think that's not a, you know, big package for you to become a better player. But for me, it was. Playing for Coach K, he gave me the keys to the car, and I was driving it in first 8 games. And, you know, being a part of something special like that and having a brotherhood built at an institution such as that one is an experience that you never forget.
Ice Cube has been our guest.
Hey, man, thanks for letting me talk a little music, movies, and sports. Hey, my favorite 3 topics.
Hey, y'all. It is the EST of WWE, the strongest, the fastest, the roughest, the toughest, the quickest, the greatest, the best on Box to Row. Tune in if you want to catch the best BEST interview ever.
From the Press Box to Press Row is the sports talk show that is the voice and the talk of HBCU sports, with a flair for pro sports talk and entertainment. Check the show out online at BoxToRow.com.
That's Box to Row, real, relevant radio. Florida A&M Rattlers amongst the tops in the SWAC right now, 12-12 on the season. And as a matter of fact, the Rattlers have won 4 straight basketball games. Got that road trip in Alabama this week or Saturday, and then, of course, on Monday with Alabama State and Alabama A&M. In his first season as the head men's basketball coach at Florida A&M is Patrick Crary II, as he joins us here on Box to Row. Coach Crary, welcome to the program.
Thank you for having me. Excited to be here and get this thing going.
No, the pleasure is all ours. I mean, wow, you're rolling. One of the hottest teams in the SWAC. You won 4 straight ball games and 9 of your last 10 ball games. Your thoughts on the way the Rattlers and your team is playing right now?
Very pleased. I mean, just, you know, had the growth mindset all year. So just trying to get better each day, trying to work on each practice, each game. Our guys have bought in. Our guys are playing, you know, very well. And I just like to see the camaraderie they have, especially the guys from last year who didn't win that many games, like just them having that chance to win and see how, you know, winning can change your life. And so I'm just seeing that with our guys and with our team, and it's definitely a special group.
I mean, you've had some coaching experiences, right? Like you won a national championship when you were the head coach at Washington Adventist in Tacoma Park, Maryland. But your first time in terms of a head coach at the Division I level, what are you sort of maybe – learning about yourself in terms of not only being a Division I head coach, but being, you know, your first season as the head coach at FAMU?
And just Division I, it's a lot of other things outside of basketball. You know, I think when you're working on a, you know, Division II NAI level, you might have like extra jobs. You know, you might do like I've been an AD, I was an assistant AD, a head AD, whatever, just to make the money work. And, you know, Division I, now you got to do shows, you know, radio, alumni events, meetings. There's always new things, you know, a lot of new things to do. And particularly at FAM, you know, we have a great alumni base, you know, one of the best in the country, if not the best, for HBCUs. We're just, you know, a big time business. It's a family. And so, you know, meeting all those people and establishing those relationships. And then also I learned about myself, you know, basketball is basketball. And I've always known that, you know, when you get on the court, it doesn't say D1, D2, D3, NAI, it's basketball. So just having that confidence in myself and the humble beginnings that I had, I think it's helped us jumpstart this thing a little quicker than most people thought we would.
Do you enjoy all of, you mentioned all of the other things surrounding it, the media, you know, opportunities, the press conferences, the weekly, you know, the post-game stuff where maybe you didn't have that in the past. Do you enjoy that?
Of course. You got to love it. I mean, it's part of the job. You got to love your job. Understand all that goes into being a head coach. I think a lot of assistant coaches, you know, they think being a head coach is telling people what to do and drawing plays. But it's a lot more than that. It's establishing relationships. It's building a culture. It's representing your institution and your university first. It's a lot of different things that go into being a head coach. And so you got to embrace it. You got to love it. And most importantly, you got to be grateful for every opportunity you get.
Patrick Crary II is the head men's basketball coach at Florida A&M in his first season as he joins us here on Box to Row. Nine of your last 10, because you started the season out in the SWAC 0-3, and obviously you had some tough opponents. I mean, when you're playing the likes of Southern, who's on top, you know, Grambling won it last year, but Bethune-Cookman is playing well. I mean, that's going to – those are tough games. But what's – aside from that, is it just a different way that you're playing in these last 10 opposed to how you started the season off?
And we weren't healthy. You know, we got our two wings back, you know, our two starting wings, Caleb Washington, a 6'9 kid who went to Dayton, and Jordan Chapman, who was like the heart and soul of our team. He was on last year's team, and he came back, one of our team captains. So you're playing without, you know, that wing position is really the most important position in basketball now because of the things you can do defensively. It used to be, you know, everybody wanted a point guard, everybody wanted a big. Well, now everybody wants wings, you know, wings who can do things defensively, put pressure on the rim offensively, also stretch the floor. And so having those two guys out definitely hurt us. And then also understanding the league, understanding how the league is officiated, and also understanding our team playing against teams on the low major level. So we had played, you know, seven high majors, and we'd only played two low majors. And so it's a different game when you're playing on the low major level. And so being able to understand that, understand our team more, establish our relationships more with our players and our coaching staff. And this is the first year for all of us. So we all had to get on the same page together. And we've been doing that over the last, you know, 4 or 5 weeks now.
It's interesting you mentioned that. You mentioned high majors. I mean, for those that are listening, check this schedule out. The season opened at TCU, then at SMU, at Maryland, at Florida. Those are four major, you know, programs. And then you play Trinity Baptist and you go to Clemson, you know, how and then at Utah at some point. Like how did those particular games against the high majors help you to where you are right now, if they in fact did?
You know, I think there's a lot of debate on do they help you, do they hurt you. I can only speak to just for me from a personal development standpoint. It helped me out a lot, you know, understanding just different X's and O's and how some of our actions worked against bigger, stronger, faster. And then you have to play perfect basketball to win those games. So you have to play like it's February, March, and November to have a chance to win those games when the talent level and the resource level is just so different from, you know, we have four coaches. They probably got 18 coaches. So it's a lot of things that go into this winning and then competing on that high major level. So we were grateful for the opportunity. You know, you're just going in there. You're like, man, I used to watch this on TV. You got TCU, SMU. I went home to Maryland. The Maryland broadcast guy came to my locker room before the game. And I was just like, I couldn't believe it. I was just shocked. And I was like, I've been listening to you on the radio since I was like 6 years old. Right. And he knew my name and was shaking my hand. And it was just a crazy experience. I think it helped our team. It humbled our team. Also humbled our staff. And got us to work, you know, I think a lot more together with our group than we probably were earlier.
Patrick Crary II, the head men's basketball coach at Florida A&M, joining us here on the program. I'm looking at, like, some of your personnel, and you've got some guys that can really, really play. Let me start with Sterling Young, because I know he's played in 12 games. He's only started seven, but, I mean, he's averaging 18.8 points per game. You know, one of the leading scorers in the SWAC. Speak to how he's played so far this year.
He's played great. You know, Sterling came from the highest level of anybody that we had. Came from University of Charlotte. You know, the American Conference is a really good conference. It's like a step below the Power Four conferences. And so we knew his talent was there. It was just about getting on the court. And he's grown so much since the summertime when he first got here. Accepted any role we've given him. So, you know, he, like you said, he started some games, come off the bench some games. He just gives us a different feel. He's dynamic. He shoots the three ball. He's second in the conference in three-pointers made and three-point field goal percentage. And he's just so dynamic and fast. It's like you don't want to press him out because he's so fast and he has a good handle. You can't back up because he can really shoot the ball. So he's like a typical, like, new-age lead guard. You know, not a point guard, but, you know, just like an old-fashioned point guard. But he is the new-age lead guard who can really score the basketball. And he's been so much better on his reads. You know, our Jackson State game, he had 28 points in like 27 minutes. But he read the floor so well, picked his spots, was able to, you know, read the ball screen coverage. And that's pretty much really the growth of our team, is just our ability to read situations and really get better. And so I'm really happy for Sterling and how he's playing.
You know, I mean, Milton Matthews is balling for you. Jordan Chatman, yeah, you mentioned him a little bit earlier, balling for you. I got to ask you about Shaquir O'Neal. Do you ever hear from Dad?
Yeah, your dad's a good friend of mine. You know, me and a big man, we have a really good relationship. And so I'm just blessed that he trusted Shaquir to come to me. I mean, he had a great relationship with Johnny. You know, Shaq played for Johnny years ago. And so for him to put his, you know, his youngest, his last boy with me, really, you know, speaks a lot to our relationship and the trust he has. And Shaquir's blossomed this year. I think Shaquir's about 8.5, 9 points a game, shooting over 50% from the field, over 40% from three. You know, he didn't get a lot of opportunity. Texas Southern, you know, the class program of the SWAC, they've had a lot of good players. So, you know, I think it was just tough for him over there. But, you know, our system really works for him. We spread it out, play a pro-style system, shoot a lot of threes. Our guys play with great freedom, and it's really worked out for him. It's really worked out for us. So I'm really happy to see Shaquir and how he's grown and how he's getting better.
No, I think let me go to that point, because I think that's interesting. You say shoot a lot of threes. I mean, yes. I mean, you look at the amount of threes that you've taken this year, 638, but you're hitting at a high clip, leading the SWAC at 36% threes. Is that because of the personnel you have? Is that always sort of been your philosophy?
Well, I spent the, I think it was 2023 summer with the San Antonio Spurs and working their summer league. And the year before that, I was all in on just analytics and threes and how they impact winning and what they're doing in Europe and what they're doing in the NBA. And so the year before, we were one of the top NAI shooting teams. We did number one and number two threes made per game guys on our team. And both of them shot over 40%. So for me, I think I'm an offensive guy, but I'm really probably to the core a defensive guy. And the hardest thing for me to guard was teams that have a lot of shooting that can space the floor. So, you know, that was our philosophy offensively as we built this class. And I knew once I got, you know, 13 scholarships, you know, NAI, you know, D2, you're dealing with 7-8 scholarships. You know, 13 scholarships, I can really cater this team to that system. So, you know, we went out and got guys that really could shoot the ball or show that they had the mechanics to improve their shot. And then along with a lot of work and then the confidence that we give them and their skill set has just been able to work.
Last thought, Coach Crary, and we really appreciate the time. And when you look at Southern right now, sort of, I don't, not necessarily running away with the conference, but the fact of the matter is the Jaguars have only lost one game. And then there's you at 9-4, Jackson State at 9-4, Alabama State at 8-5, Texas Southern 8-5, Bethune-Cookman 8-5, Alcorn State 8-5. A lot of basketball left to be played. It's anybody's conference. Your last loss was to Alabama State, and that was at home. Now you got to go on the road. Speak to some of the challenges that the Hornets present.
Matchup problem, very well coached. They do a lot of different things offensively, flare screens, back screens, ghost screens. They'll run a lot of different action out of the same formation, similar to us. They do a really good job of disguising it. They have the highest scoring trio in the league. all three of their guards, from CJ Hines to Knox to Matlock, who's just a bulldozer. They make the right plays. They lead the league in not turning the ball over. They take care of the basketball. So every possession, they put it on you to have to sit down and really guard. And they're physical, big guards, you know, 6'3", long, 6'4", 6'5", athletic. Coach Matlock does a really good job with their team. So I just think from a schematic standpoint, you know, they have some really good guys in the matchups there. I think they can cause some problems for us. So they came in here, they beat us, and they deserved the win. They were prepared. They did a great job as a coaching staff. Although they prepared in their pregame prep, they were very good. They came here early. They were on the court before us. You know, they deserve to beat us. And so, you know, we're looking to get there and, you know, get some get back.
Patrick Crary II in his first season as the head men's basketball coach at Florida A&M. He joins us here on Box to Rush. Mentioned the Rattlers are 12-12 on the season, in second place in the SWAC, on the road the next couple of games, Saturday at Alabama State, Monday against Alabama A&M. Coach Crary, we really appreciate the time. Continued success to you and the Rattlers.
Much love to the DMV. I appreciate you having me on today. Thank you for everybody that supported us all year. And as always, fangs up. Fangs up.
Patrick Crary II, the head men's basketball coach of Florida A&M, joining us here on Box to Row. You can react to anything that Coach Crary had to say. Again, the competitiveness in the SWAC. We talked about that a little bit earlier on in the program. Up next here on Box to Row, we take a look at the second half of the NBA.
Learn how thousands of smart homeowners are investing about a dollar to avoid expensive home repair bills. John, a former non-customer, said, "My air conditioner broke and I had to spend $1,900 to fix it." Jeff, a customer, wrote, "My air conditioner broke and I got a new one at no out-of-pocket cost." Mary, a former non-customer, wrote, "My heating system stopped running. I had to spend $3,000 to get a new one." Lisa, a customer, wrote, "My heater stopped working. I got it fixed at no out-of-pocket cost." For about $1 a day, you can have all the major appliances and systems in your home guaranteed fixed or replaced. Call now. If the lines are busy, please call back.
Call the Home Warranty Hotline now at 800-824-3853. 800-824-3853. 800-824-3853. That's 800-824-3853.
It's Donald Ware from the Press Box to Press Row.
Even though the NBA All-Star Weekend took place last weekend, it's really more than just the midway point through the NBA season. In other words, you play 82 games at the 41-game mark, you're at the midway point. Well, really, right now, there's really only about, depending upon the team, somewhere between 25 to 28 games remaining in the NBA schedule. And then, of course, we pick up right after that with the NBA playoffs, which that needs no fixing. Like the All-Star weekend, really the game specifically needs fixing. The NBA playoffs need no fixing. That, like, I think a lot of times that's what we look forward to. And in years past, I mean, I got to be honest with you, that's something I've looked more forward to in terms of the playoffs, because when I think about a whole NBA season, and this is probably going back 5-6 years ago, I'm like, man, is it really going to be that exciting? You know, can we get to Christmas already? You know, but then the season comes around, they have intriguing matchups. I think the NBA has done a much better job in terms of working with its broadcast partners. In other words, sometimes, like with the ABC games, we wouldn't even see an NBA game until maybe going back like 8-9 years ago. You wouldn't even see an NBA game in prime time on a Sunday until after Christmas, maybe the first of the year. Now we've had some of the games at prime time on Saturday. We've got, you know, a big game on Saturday between the Nuggets and the Lakers this Saturday. Of course, we're into the new year, but I'm just saying I think the NBA and its partners have done a much better job in terms of bringing us games. We know that this is the last year that TNT will be a part of the NBA after whatever 40 plus years of being a part of the NBA. Now, you know, you have all of these different services. Some of it's going to go to streaming, all of those kinds of things. If you've listened to this show, you know how I feel about streaming in a lot of respects. Won't get into it now. That said, again, we're talking 25 to 28 games left in the season. So who are kind of contenders and who are pretenders, right? So let's look at the top of the Western Conference. You know, the Thunder, I think, are definitely contenders, because this is the thing about the Thunder. I think, as far as I'm concerned, I think you need kind of some time to make yourself known. Like, let me give you an example. The Thunder last year, a pretty good team, didn't necessarily fare well in the playoffs. So the Thunder has that experience now. And so I think it's going to make the Thunder more battle tested, to the point that the Thunder have been really, really good. Like to me, the Thunder have been the best team in the NBA all season, not just with the record. All respects to the Cleveland Cavaliers, all respects to the defending champion Boston Celtics, but the Thunder been the best team in the NBA this season, with the best player in Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. Like, SGA has been phenomenal. You've got Jalen Williams, you've got Chet Holmgren. I really think Isaiah Hartenstein was a huge pickup. Like, that was a huge pickup, because that solidifies your defense, especially on the back end. Hartenstein plays hard. He's going to give you great defense. He's going to block shots, and he's going to give you some offense as well. You've got both Jalen Williamses, right? Like, that's, you know, Alex Caruso. Like, this is a really good roster, and I think that this is the team, at least in the Western Conference, in my mind, the team to beat. Now, when I look at the Nuggets and the Grizzlies, I don't look at the Nuggets and the Grizzlies. I mean, I guess, depending upon how you define contender, okay, if we say that we're going to say contender means you make it to the conference finals, well, I mean, I would say the Nuggets are contenders sort of by default. Right, because when I look at the Nuggets, right, this is a Nuggets team that in 2023 won the NBA title, right? The next year, that was the 22-23 season, 23-24 season, which was last year, not so good. And then this year, the Nuggets got off to the kind of the slow start and kind of coming on. Like, I wasn't necessarily sold on the Nuggets, but when I look at the rest of the Western Division or the Western Conference, the Grizzlies, to me, being in third place is a huge surprise. I'm not sold. Like, I would say the Nuggets are, and I did say Nuggets by default. They've got to, like you have to have a team that's there that's going to make the conference finals. So I'm going to remove the by default tag for the Nuggets and say, okay, the Nuggets are contenders. The Grizzlies, no, I don't think the Grizzlies are contenders. I mean, I think, you know, Ja Morant has been healthy lately. I think he started off the season injured. I mean, Jaren, I think, is a really, really good player. It's really been the most consistent player that the Grizzlies have had the last two or three years. And they've got some pieces, but I don't see the Grizzlies making it to the Western Conference Finals. The Rockets, look, the Rockets are really, really good. And Ime Udoka, the head coach, there was some stuff that happened to him, no doubt about it, when he was the coach of the Celtics. I think had he not gotten fired because of personal reasons going back a couple of years ago, I think the Celtics would have won the NBA championship under Udoka and then moving forward, because that was already a good team. And then you add Udoka, right? Because look what he's done for the Rockets. Like, the Rockets are playing well. At one time, the Rockets were, like, in second place. But look, I mean, you've got some good players. I mean, obviously, Jalen Green, one of the really good young players in the league. You've got, you know, veterans in Steven Adams, Dylan Brooks. You know, Fred VanVleet has been an integral part of, you know, working and being part of the sort of the younger core with Amen Thompson and all of these guys. Like, this is a pretty good basketball team that I think is very well coached. But I think that's going to be a bit of an issue when the Rockets, or for me, for saying that the Rockets are contenders. That's going to be an issue moving forward when you're going up against the likes of a Thunder team that is tested, right? A Nuggets team that's already with its core, and now you add Russell Westbrook to that, who's playing well. You know, I do believe that the Nuggets are contenders. I didn't think so maybe a week ago, but I do think the Nuggets are contenders, right? The Timberwolves, like, I can't just summarily dismiss the Timberwolves. I mean, look, I don't think it was I mean, to trade Cat, right? I don't think that was the best move in the world for the Timberwolves. I mean, you know, look what Cat has done for the Knicks. Like, the Knicks, you talk about contenders. I'll talk about the Eastern Conference momentarily, but you talk about contenders. Like, the Knicks are definitely contenders. But I think, you know, I just don't know if it's enough, if there's enough. I don't know if there's enough for the Timberwolves, who are the defending Western Conference champs, by the way, who currently sit in seventh place, a whole 14 games behind the Thunder. Now, when you get into the playoffs, anything can happen. You've got some guys, even the guys they traded for. You know, Julius Randle has some playoff experience. I really like Dante DiVincenzo, right? You've got, you know, Anthony Edwards still there. You've got Rudy Gobert. Some of these guys that Jaden McDaniels, you know, these guys that were still part of the core of the team. But Cat was the big deal. So I'm not even sure, even with Dallas, I mean, that's I don't think the Lakers are contenders. I've watched the Lakers play, lost to the Hornets. Now, you're coming back off All-Star. Any team can beat any team on any given night, even if it's not a great team. The Lakers did bounce back the next night and without Luka and defeated the Portland Trail Blazers. And we'll see. You know, right now I would say the Lakers aren't contenders, but I want to see what the Lakers look like against the Nuggets on Saturday night in prime time. And then maybe I can reassess. In the Eastern Conference, Cavaliers, I think, are truly contenders, but we'll see. Like, the Cavaliers, again, you talk about, okay, you come up. The Cavaliers came up last year, won a playoff series, lost in the second round. I think the Cavaliers can get over the hump, but you can't have three teams, right? I think the Cavaliers, Celtics, and Knicks are all contenders. I'm not sleeping on the Bucks. I'm not a huge Doc Rivers fan as a coach, but I think if Antetokounmpo can come back healthy, along with, you know, you've got Dame time, and I thought the Kyle Kuzma trade was really a big get, a sneaky. Now, Bobby Portis has been suspended 25 games, unfortunately. I mean, he's like sort of like the heart and soul of that team, so I'm not really sure about the Bucks, but definitely the Knicks, Celtics, and Cavaliers, all contenders. I would have to say, even though the Cavaliers have the best record, I mean, the Celtics, I think, really have the most talented team. So those are my contenders for the NBA as we are really only about 30 games out, less than 30 games out from the NBA playoffs. We'll take this offline. You can hit me up on my personal X account at DWare1 and give me your thoughts. Look, my time is about up. I thank you for yours. Thank you to Patrick Crary, the head men's basketball coach at FAMU, for joining us on the program. If you've missed any of our shows, we got great content, podcasts, etc. Visit us on our website, boxtorow.com. And always remember to support those that support you. Box to Row is produced by DW Communications.